Please listen carefully.
Hi, I'm Paul Friels.
And I'm Dave Guzman.
And welcome to Practical Bass, where we talk about issues that are important to you, the working bass player. We want to elevate your gigs and gear and help you succeed at your gigs, your rehearsals, whatever is important to you. And we want you to connect with us, so please check out the website. You can subscribe to this podcast there. Website is practicalbass.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Google Plus, and we hope to hear from you. What are we going to talk about today, Dave?
Today we're going to talk about the minimal amount of effect pedals that we bring to a gig. I think for us, it's kind of some dialogue around what's important to bring, you know, when we're talking about efficiency of moving in and out of gigs, being hired for gigs, or whatever that looks like if you're in the studio. What's the minimum amount that's important to each one of you?
Right.
We'll talk about what's important to us, but just to explore that topic and really try to figure out, you know, where that is.
Yeah. I mean, when you suggested this topic, when I looked at it, I thought, oh man, this is going to be tough. And I think what I realized as I thought through it was it's not as tough as it sounds, because the answer really is it's going to differ from case to case, right? So, you know, and I think that goes right along with our philosophy of not being too didactic about this, right? Or like being dictators about, like, you absolutely should not bring, you know, this is the only thing that you should do, et cetera, right? There are people on the internet that will tell you all sorts of rules about what you can and can't do. And I think our idea really is just kind of explore a variety of situations and maybe figure out, hey, here are some maybe ground rules for people to think about.
Yeah. And you know, look, like, let's face it. There's anytime you hear a bassist play live and you're sort of, you know, tuned into the bassist because you're a bassist, there's just this curiosity as to, like, what's on their floor? Like,
right.
What's making that sound? You know, am I missing something in my lineup that's a pedal?
Yeah. Have you gone up when you see somebody's, like, stage rig? Have you crept up with your phone or whatnot and, like, snap a picture of their pedal board? Because I've done it.
I've done it.
You've done it too? Yeah. Okay. And probably many of our listeners
place.
Have.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you kind of sneak up and you're just like, click. It's like trade secrets, but right. You know, nobody treats it that way, right? These are all like tools that everybody can get, but it's really cool to then like geek out over that afterwards and say, oh, he's using so-and-so pedal.
Right. And ironically, like with basses, I think just in general, we don't use a lot of pedals. You know, if you go to a, you know, big box guitar store, you'll find there's not a whole lot of pedals that are designed for bassists.
Yeah.
They'll give you like whatever the guitar is. There's been so many times where I would just want to try a pedal and they just give me a guitar pedal.
Right. And so, it's not like, it's not voiced the same.
Right.
You sometimes like you lose some of the low end punch.
Right.
That you like on your instrument. Yeah. I mean, the stores really do kind of cater to guitar players, and you know, we're not kicking guitar players in any way. I mean, that's definitely like not a goal of our conversations, but it is something that, you know, people are going to run into. It's a little harder to find those effects. And so sometimes you've just, you know, you got to get a hold of them. You may have to pick one up fork over the green to buy it in order to try it out in your chain and see how you like it.
That's right. And I think one of the, you know, you were saying that this was, you know, kind of seems like a difficult topic, and it is. At the end of the day, what's ironic about it is that it's not that difficult. We could just say what we have on our stage.
Yeah.
But what's difficult is just sort of thinking about, you know, is it the right amount? Like, is this, you start questioning yourself, right. Like, do I need any more? And for me, my perspective, and I think that you'll always see this like throughout our theme, is that, you know, Paul and I do differ. We play similar type of gigs, but each bassist has a different approach, and there's just a different way to look at it. For me, I know like my, I think like, you know, for me personally, what's important to me is that I can get in and out of a gig with one walk, like one trip. And it's an obsession and it's a thing that's just a part of my life or whatever that is. So
One is the magic number.
The one trip. Right? It's like you finally made it. You've finally gotten there.
But you know, one is the loneliest number too.
It is also the loneliest number. Right?
Sorry.
Right. You know, maybe I should expand my concept on this, but I think that, you know, but that's where I come. Like that's where I come to this topic. And that's why it's a challenge for me, because I'm always trying to figure out, I don't have the room for all these pedals or for a pedal board. It's just not going to ever happen for me. So I need to like dwindle it down to what is crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and the question about how many pedals or what things that you need, I think something that you and I have talked about in the past and agree on is it really comes down to what kind of gig are you covering? Like what is it that you're doing?
Right.
You know, my history is playing with a lot of songwriters, a lot of roots rock, folk, acoustic, things like that. Like I did that for many, many years. And really those gigs are in terms of packing light, they are the ideal, because really the song, right, the voice and the performance of the song by the singer is absolutely the focus of what's going on. And my number one objective or my number one guiding principle in those gigs was do not distract from the person delivering the performance. The only function I have there is basically to add some low notes into what's going on and like create some weight and some heft in the right areas.
Right.
And that tonality. And so, you know, those gigs, honestly, I would literally be playing, you know, dry, like just a compressor, right? Just something to even out the notes really. Yeah. And like maybe get a bit of sustain on the bass through the compressor.
Yep.
And that is about it. I mean, I was there to not attract attention. And I did that, you know, as those were kind of my bread and butter gigs were those kind of gigs, and just not putting yourself too far out there. So anything that was like adding a crazy amount of tone or like calling attention to the bass was often the exact opposite of what was desired in that gig.
Right. Right. And I'm lucky because my primary gig, it's very much like that. I mean, I just want that raw sound. And you know, I was lucky enough to have, with my last setup, I'm in a transition point right now. So, but in my last setup, I had, you know, basically just a, you know, it was a Spectracomp on the TC electronic head where I had a compressor just built right in, a one knob, easy to use, pretty smart type of compressor, one button. It alleviated that pedal. It was just right there on board.
Yeah. Then you've got, I guess on the other side, right, there's like the exact opposite. So, you know, you look at some of, maybe modern rock or metal or, you know, alternative, you know, what people call alternative now. Right.
Yep.
I don't mean like those kids, like get off my lawn. I mean like, you know, what you kind of hear on.
Sure, kind of more on like the indie side where it's experimental and you're trying to fuse in different musics, or it's maybe heavier on the rock, but also has sort of this disposition of maybe funk in there or whatever.
Yeah. Or just, you know, really trying to carve a new path, and you're really, you know, people are really looking for an individual sort of voice, something maybe they haven't heard before. And that might be the exact opposite. You know, you might hear like distortions and overdrives, or you might hear like, you know, the bass maybe fuzzed out. Like you hear this in some like great heavy rock out there nowadays, or sort of like the heavier side of jam rock, which I think is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And you may hear like some pretty fuzzy, you know, overdriven bass there.
Right.
And you know, that can really be helpful as well.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things I made a point to talk about too, is, you know, you start to get into these like little different, you know, niche genres, but, you know, for me, I played salsa and Latin music for 5 years. And I know these aren't like the type of gigs that most people are playing, but ultimately you're just trying to get your bass to fit in with the style of the music. And there, you know, originally that was an upright bass, and historically salsa was played upright. Then it converts to electric, and then they started doing these sort of like hollow body upright electric basses. They're still like, you know, it's like a scale of a bass, but they're ultimately they're just trying to get that sound.
Yeah.
So they're really that was
sort
also
of warm, like that warm woody
exactly
thing.
Yeah. And so you just want that note to die. So how do you do it?
Yeah.
Well, turns out, even though this is not really on topic, it's not a pedal, but it is it's a way that we're like enforcing change onto our bass, but that would just be like what you would use on sort of like a Motown type gig where you're just throwing a piece of foam in there.
Yes, the old school, like stick the foam under your bridge.
Yeah,
right, absolutely.
And I've learned a lot of, and for those that like want to explore that, I've watched a lot of videos and tried a lot of different because different foams mean different things. The sponge with the Brillo pad on one, the one with the Brillo pad on one side, and the sponge on the other.
And you put that with, like, I assume with the Brillo side toward your strings because it's not going to hurt them, and the sponge toward the finish of the bass.
You know what? Just make sure the Brillo is like somewhat dead, like you can actually use it, but the Brillo goes on the bass, which is, I know, like touchy for some, but but Scott's bass lesson said it's okay.
Yeah.
That was a big concern of mine, but you know, but it stays there. It doesn't really move very much.
So, and then you just want to carve that, I guess, thick enough that it'll like,
An inch.
Yeah.
Inch is all.
So just an inch of length, and you kind of fit that against the bridge.
Yeah, it just has that right like thickness of it. And there's so many, I think originally my first one was like an egg crate.
Yeah.
Or any piece of foam you find, just, you know.
So that's definitely good for like, you know, that old school vibe. And, you know, maybe for, you know, one more note for equipment that we might want to say here is the absolutely, you know, the one of the most famous units out there is the Tech 21 Sans amp. I mean, you'll find them in, people will use them in studios. They'll use them as a front end to their rig. You know, they are amp simulators. They can add some grit, some drive,
some overdrive in there.
Yeah. They're fantastic. Did you ever have one of these?
Actually, it was the first pedal that I ever got. And it's because I did the nerdy thing of just asking everybody what their pedals were. And the consistent one was that one. Yeah. I'm not even sure why I got it in the first place. And then I found the uses for it afterward. I just got lucky that way.
You can almost fake like an Ampeg, like a big Ampeg SVT rig with those and run it directly in for your, you know, if you're recording direct, if you're doing a, you know, tracking or something in your home studio, they're fantastic.
I use it as that. I mean, it's definitely a good studio recording.
Yeah.
Or if you just want to give your amp a little bit of boost.
Yeah.
It's got it.
Yeah. It just, and you, there's like this bite that you can get out of them. That's just fantastic. Now, what do you find that you're generally using on stage, Dave?
So it's, you know, usually pretty simple. So I will start with, you know, the first thing that's most important to me, and I know it's not an effect pedal, but it is a pedal and it has to be made known, is that I use, you know, for me, it's my TC, the polychromatic tuner.
Oh yeah.
It's gotta be up there. It not only serves as like an easy tuner and I can, because it's polychromatic, all that means is that when I'm using it, I can just strum all of my strings at the same time and it'll show me, it'll give me like an idea as to all of my strings and where they're at.
It'll tell you at one time which are in tune.
Yeah. That's amazing. I don't have to like waste my time on each one. Yeah. That's great for like in between songs. And then I'll kind of narrow down just on one. And you don't have to click anything to do that. You just strum it and it shows you everything. And then you can work on that one string. That's critical for me. You know, other than that, you know, it's compressor is really important. And right now, like I said, I'm actually at this point where I'm shopping. So there's like this world, of compressors and a huge price difference. I mean, there's the up to $100, which like, so for that TC that I was using, that was built into my old amp, called the, I think Spectracomp.
Yeah.
Spectracomp.
And you really just kind of like, it's one knob, right? You turn it up, you get more compression or less compression.
Yeah, right. And it's and it was a smart technology. But, you know, as I explore, you know, this is a whole nother topic of compression that we won't get into, but there are great products out there. You know, I'm looking at like the Keeley MXR, Aguilar. Those are all like great, great quality products that you know, I need to take serious and really shopping for some, taking my time.
Yeah. And we're definitely going to talk a lot about you. Like we've got, we're definitely got a whole like thing going on for compressors. That's going to be in a future episode.
The other piece I used, that was also part of my amp that I've got to like somehow figure it out to retune, is I had a tube tone that basically, it simulated a tube amp and it did a really nice job of it. It gave it the warmth, and if I really cranked it, it would give me that overdrive. It would break the note if I'm really in like a heavier gig. And that is like the bare minimum of what I bring on stage. The other like optional ones for me, I really love my octave pedal, my Boss, you know, whatever, OC3 or whatever it is. I think the OC2 is the one that's like the classic.
Yeah.
This is the third, which just for adds like a different, but you know, that to me is great because it adds the drive that I need. It's also good for like those like kind of like indie rock things. If I want to have like this almost orchestrated bass line that's just like going to peak out, I can hit that and it's really dramatic.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, or, you know, there's other uses for it, but they're just kind of like punches that I can pop in. I have a couple of songs that I play that I'll use it throughout, but very few. Usually it's just a punch that I'm throwing in there.
Right.
Other than that, I think the chorus pedal is critical. It's really good for, you know, some, whether it's a solo, I don't solo very much, but sometimes you just need those notes just to like kind of sail.
Just
a
to
bit.
Have a little width. Mm-hmm. Like it gives it a little more width and it sort of like just brings the voicing of the bass out a little over the band.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and
that's,
for sure.
And that's pretty much it. I mean, the only other thing, and I was mentioning this earlier before we started recording, was the, for me, was, you know, I think, like, I've got a wish list of this, like, the synth. I don't even know the name of it, but you did, Paul. It was, like, that synth.
Oh, the Pog.
The
right?
Pog.
The Electro-Harmonix Pog.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it's They're and amazing. The reason why I like it is because it's the bassist, like, I'm listening to a lot of these bassists that are in New York that are, like, these jazz guys that are doing this stuff with synth, like, all throughout.
Yeah.
It's just like, cool.
Oh, I'm a Hammond organ all of a sudden. Yeah.
But like, would I ever bring it on stage? Probably would never make this list. I would probably use it for like my home studio or maybe like a recording or whatever.
Or, you know, you've talked about having like your own project that's kind of like, you know, your own expressive, you know, who you are as a musician. Like maybe that's something that you bring out for that kind of, for that kind of vibe.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like you're not serving, you know, some other band or some other vision, like, you know, that may be something where you're going to branch out and use that in your own project.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I talked a little bit earlier about how I've done a lot of gigs really with just a compressor. I mean, that's an absolute must. And I tend to play, I've played a lot of different basses. Five string is really where I'm most comfortable and happy right now. And I think it's because I do a lot more like R&B and funk and things like
that. That's right. Yeah.
And it also helps me from a perspective of, you know, I don't have huge hands. And so for me, having like being able to play fairly low notes further up the neck is helpful. But in doing that, it's also important to make sure that the volume on them is even.
Right.
And so in certain situations, rooms being what they are, I can have my bass adjusted really well, but certain, like if you get down to a certain low area of low notes and the very low register, they will pop out much harder.
Yeah.
And so being able to tame that is really helpful.
Yeah,
you know,
because and it's distracting when it does happen.
Yeah, you feel
and you
become, like
you get obsessed with it. Oh, you could just hear like, you know, exactly when that note's come and you're like, oh, it's like on the E string, like the 10th fret up, like or whatever that note is on your bass. And it just starts to sings, which is beautiful in itself. But
you did
not when the next note is like two strings down. You know, four frets back.
Yeah, like you didn't mean to suddenly like bark at everybody, right? And suddenly you did. And, you know, and a lot of times I'm playing like an active jazz style bass. And, you know, I find that with a compressor, I can make the bass do a lot of things like finger wise, just, you know, dig in to make it like bark more like I was talking about. Or, you know, I'll just the EQ to get like, you know, if I want more bite or more thud, I won't necessarily need like a preamp that I need to kick in to get that, bite. You know, I will use the EQ on the bass to do it, or I'll use my fingers to do it. And I think I kind of grew up doing that because I didn't understand a lot about effects, and I thought that you had to do a lot of those things with your fingers. And so I got as close as I could. You know, obviously I can't replicate like phasers or, you know, envelope filters or anything like that.
But a lot of it you can do. I mean, you can do with your, you know,
there's a good amount.
Even when you're thinking about just the compressor itself, like the alternative is that you're just very cautious as to how you attack each note.
Yeah.
Like I've had, and we've talked about this, but I had challenges where like my strings were just letting out different outputs.
Yeah.
And it was problematic, and I was trying to figure out where it was at. And the alternative is just play lighter on those strings.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you start really like spending all your time controlling that. And now how do you,
now you're distracted.
How do you be musical, right? Like how can I think about the song
exactly,
and the vibe and whatnot? I love and trust having a good compressor. It really is that's non-negotiable for me. But I did ultimately get into effects, and I've had, you know, varieties of pedals right now. Humorously enough, the thing I'm using almost all the time is I've got one of these, like a Line 6 Pod XT floor unit.
Yeah.
Right. And it has a bunch of things built into it. And they're actually very, very good recreations of some of the pedals that I've had over the years.
Right.
And I love only having that one, again, having that one thing.
Yeah.
And not having to worry about like, oh, this particular unit has started like giving me fits, like the foot switch is starting to give out or whatnot.
Right.
It has been like a tank, and I've had this thing for years now.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do when it finally gives out. I mean, it's like all electronics. One day it's going to give out, and yes, all of my effects are in that thing. And I have started to like buy separates to start maybe piecing together a pedal board to take over from it.
Yeah.
Not because there's anything wrong with it, but just because I'm looking ahead to that day. But I will probably cry bitter, bitter tears of despair when it finally dies, because I've loved it for so, like it's been a great companion with me. I can't tell you how many gigs I've used it on, like literally 500 gigs probably.
Wow. Wow. And so of like, cause those like multi-effects pedals, I mean, they just have so much, right, built into them.
Yeah.
Of all of that, like how many of those like effects are you using on a regular basis?
Two. More often than not, I'm using the tuner, which is great because like when you do that, it mutes the bass so I can tune silently.
Right.
And the compressor in it, which is actually, it's based on an LA-2A. And it's a really, really nice sounding compressor on it. It really is. And there is, there's not a detectable lag in playing this like there used to be with digital effects back in the day. So I really love this. I'll be upfront and say like, I really love and have loved for a long time the stuff Line 6 does. I feel like they do their job really well. So
I agree.
But I do keep a couple effects on it, right? Like there are a few things that I do use now that I love to kick in when I want like a chorus, like you said, for the odd solo, or even just to kind of like smooth out a nice like quiet ballad or something like that.
That's right.
Just brings it a little bit extra depth and beauty. I love having the wah on it. Like I'll use that for a solo. We'll play like Sly and the Family Stone, and I will kick in a solo and like pedal the crap out of that solo it's so fun to get as a bass player to be able to do that.
Yep.
And there's a sub octave on it as well, which I'll use. And that has a awesome, like it almost like makes you sound like the funky keyboard bass that was so prevalent in like late 70s, early 80s.
Right. Like the Stevie Wonder style, like left hand.
Yeah. So I can ape that and play up on the neck. Right. But still have like this marvelous, you know, thundering low, an octave below that's coming out, and that that really is nice. So that's been it for me, I think. You know, again, most of the time though, you know, it's simple and clean, but it really does come down to, you know, really comes down to what you're doing, like what is your role, what kind of band are you in, what kind of music are you playing. So there's not like a one size fits all. The great thing is there's so much out there for us to.
Yeah, I think that there's like common themes on what we'll, you know, what some of us have. But you know, if you get a new gig, and it's at a totally different genre,
Yeah.
You gotta needle through and figure out like, how am I going to get that sound that works for that band?
Yeah. And it might be really looking at other, what do other people do that are working in that genre? Like, what are some of the influences? What are they doing? And, you know, kind of taking some hints and tips out of that.
Yeah.
You know, there's one thing we didn't talk about here, and I feel like this is something that's probably a topic all to itself, which is loopers. We didn't talk about that at all. Loopers to me, frankly, I think they're awesome. Like when I see players who know what they're doing as arrangers, who can like use a looping machine to build up a groove and build up a whole song that they're doing as a bass player.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
It's like a whole nother instrument almost.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, because you can almost use, you know, you get the lows and the thumpiness and even like just using your bass as like a rhythmic thing.
Yeah.
And also then being able to play like higher up and play, you know, these beautiful melodies that'll be like more in a, like a tenor voice range. You know, you can really kind of explore the whole instrument, but I almost feel like, you know, our whole point here, I think for this episode was to talk about what's the minimum. And I would say those units are something that's best left for like, that's exploring a different kind of playing, right?
Right.
Which is the bass as the feature, or maybe the only
instrument.
So yeah, I don't think we're down on loopers at all. I think that's, you know, but that's really maybe a whole other way to take bass. So
that's right.
Yeah. Well, that was a great discussion. So I guess this is probably a good place as any to stop for now. And I hope you guys have enjoyed listening to the episode. Once again, you can find us at practicalbass.com, where you can subscribe to this podcast. You can find us on iTunes and Google Play. You can pick up our RSS feed if you have a different kind of podcatching app. You can also find us on Facebook, on Google+, on Twitter, on Instagram. Look for Practical Bass and you will find us there. We would love to connect with you. We are looking for our listeners to get involved. We want to know you. We want to have a relationship with you. So let us know what you like, what you don't like, criticism, any suggestions. If you've got ideas for the podcast, for topics you'd like to see, we would love to hear from you. We read everything that you send us. And until we can accept beer in the mail, I guess we have to just leave it with comments. All right. So So I guess until next time, I'm Paul Frields.
I'm Dave Guzman.
And this has been Practical Bass.
Thanks for listening.